the hardest thing with for us is our students think we make up all these rules. We don't make them up. You know, we have basic school rules, but some of the other things is, why can't I do that? Well, because the law or the regulation, they'll put me in jail if I let you do that.
Hey guys, my name's Charlie Gray.
I'm Allison Alhamed.
Hi, I'm Erica Keelan.
It's Kia Artistically Neal.
I'm Kimberly Tay-Hair, and you're listening to the Hair Game Podcast.
Hey listener, I'm Eric Taylor. All right, we're switching up the Podloot giveaways. We're keeping it fresh. We're going to move from a weekly giveaway to a larger monthly giveaway. On the first episode of every month, we are going to give away $500 cash to one listener who has written us a review on the Apple Podcast app. The winner has 2 weeks to claim it. If the winner does not claim it, then we give away $750 the following month. This is how we have fun, Donovan and I. We sit around, we think of ways to have fun, and this is what we're doing right now. I'll give you more details at the end of the show. Now to my conversation with beauty school veteran, Bob Gross. Hi, Bob, how are you?
I'm good, how are you, Eric?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm gonna introduce you and you can interject if I screw anything up. You're the owner of Salon Success Academy, a family-owned and operated beauty school with a long history in Southern California going back 60 years. It's founded by your dad, Richard Gross. And it was originally known as Richard's Beauty School, I understand. Is that correct?
Beauty College.
Richard's Beauty College. So that was the original name 60 years ago. At some point, it became Salon Success Academy. And then you took over the helm in 1991. Is that right?
That's correct.
Wow. So you've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, I took it over in 91. And 92, I changed the name and my dad asked me, what the heck are you doing?
You're getting rid of my legacy.
That's how he looked at it. I said, Dad, the industry's changing.
Yeah. They yeah. don't care who Richard is, right?
I told him this. I said, hey, if you were a really famous hairdresser, we'd stick with the name.
Right. Yeah.
The days of naming the school after yourself or the city it's located in, I think, are going by the wayside.
Yeah, I think that was a wise move. You're also the chairman of the Professional Beauty Federation of California. Our listeners who are regulars with us have heard Fred Jones talk several times. And so thank you for serving the beauty community in that way for the last 20 years.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
All right. So what I like talking about history in this industry, because it always seems like we're all about the new trend and the, oh, it's vivids. Oh, it's the bronze color. It's the this, it's the that. What did I see yesterday? The shaggy bob or the shab, you know, everything is about new and next and let's all look forward. I like to now and then look back and think about where we've been. And so I'm excited to get into this conversation. We've also never had a podcast episode about schools in the 4 years of me doing this podcast. So that's why I wanted to get you on here. And so I'm excited to have this conversation.
Well, I'm hoping I can do the schools justice.
I'm sure you, if anybody can, I think it's you. So why don't you tell me, if you remember, why did your dad get into the school business in the first place?
He was living in L.A. He didn't like his job, and his brother-in-law.
What was his job?
He was working at May Company.
Okay. Sales. Department stores.
Department stores. I had just been born, and his brother-in-law was a salon owner in Los Angeles. And he said, if he can do it, I can do it. And his brother-in-law was making better money than him. So he went to beauty school at night, kept his job during the day, got out, and went to work with his brother-in-law.
As a hairstylist?
Yes. And then eventually moved to San Bernardino, which is where my mother was from. Opened his own salon. Did quite well, but decided he wanted to be in the school business because he basically thought he could make better money and do a better job in the school business than what he'd experienced.
Yeah. Okay, so he opened up one, and now I think you have six locations?
We have six currently. We had 14 located in Southern California, Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, and Las Vegas.
Wow.
Okay. How I got teeth running around.
I understand multiple unit operations. It gets very complicated. I mean, moving from one to two is exponentially more complicated, right? Moving from two to four is exponentially more complicated. Well, okay, so in 91, why did you follow in his footsteps? What were you doing before that, and what compelled you to follow in those footsteps?
Well, I graduated from San Diego State in 78, back then.
In the past,
was going to go to law school, and he approached me to come work with him, and I said, if I do that, I got to go to beauty school. So I went from one day in college, graduated. The next day I was enrolled in beauty school. I went from living in a fraternity house with 60 guys to going to beauty school with 60 girls.
Amazing.
What? I learned more in that 1 year in school, in beauty school, than four in college.
I love it. And so you went to your dad's school, I imagine.
Yes.
Okay.
And eventually it got out that I was the owner's son. So everybody that had a problem with the school came to me. So it was a challenge.
Yeah, of course. So you became a de facto manager, and when you were a student, you didn't even want to manage it.
I didn't want to, but if there was any problems, maintenance problems, a client somebody wouldn't take, you name it, I couldn't say no. Okay. But it was worth it. You know what? Beauty school is a lot harder than people think. I can tell you that from experience. You've got to learn some self-discipline. Back when I went, you were expected to go 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and graduate within 10 months. I mean, that's just the norm. You didn't mess around. You went, you got it over with. Back then, you had to wait months to go to board, but, you know, that's another story. But so I did that, and on the weekends, I packed orders, delivered supplies, filled vending machines, changed light bulbs. It was 7 days a week. I was not happy. And I wasn't being paid either.
No, I get it. I get it. It almost seems like the rite of passage, isn't it? Oh. I mean, in from two standpoints. One, the standpoint of a student learning something new, and you're trying to find your footing and, you know, get the skills necessary to go out there and actually achieve something. And you're the son of the owner of the business. I also was the son of an owner of a business. My dad owned warehouses, and I had to go sweep these warehouses out when it was 130 degrees. You know, in Texas, there's no air conditioning or whatever. I didn't get paid either. So, yeah, you were getting the brunt of that from two different directions. Yeah. So then what on earth made you want to actually run the show?
Well, by the time my dad retired, I actually had a brother and sister involved in the business also. Hmm. And they both left for various reasons my brother left first, so my sister and I were running the operation. And then her and I we disagreed on some things. She just wanted to sit back and tell me what to do. And I'm going, look, you either get involved or find something you like doing, because this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
And so the smartest thing I ever did is I shut down schools. I said, this is too many. I think when I took over, we had around 10 shut down the out-of-state, shut down or sold schools. And I concentrated my effort in the Inland Empire. And I've got six campuses, and there's a lot of synergy, because students having problems or does something that we can't tolerate and we want to give them a second chance, which we usually do. We say, you can continue, but you got to move to another school. You can't finish here. So staffing wise, it's good, it's consistent, because if we've got emergency, we can be there in 20 minutes to a half hour, or a staff member, an instructor can get there. So we've got a great level of consistency in our company, and we're just big enough to deal with the tremendous amount of regulations that we have to comply with, you know?
Yeah.
The hardest thing with for us is our students think we make up all these rules. We don't make them up. You know, we have basic school rules, but some of the other things is, why can't I do that? Well, because the law or the regulation, well, I mean, they'll put me in jail if I let you do that.
Especially with slaves. I'm super interested in that. Let's go back to 91 and look at the last 32 years. How's it changed? How's the regulation changed?
Primarily, well, on the state basis, it goes up and down, you know, depending who's running the state board, who's in office in Sacramento. Some years you get some favorable things done, and some years you just hope to stop things. On a federal level, the Department of Education has continually put layers of restrictions and regulations and requirements on our ability to access financial aid for the students. In addition, our accrediting agency, which my brother actually, that's when he left, he went and ran that for a while, which was a blessing. But in recent years, I don't think they realize that we're the customer. You know, they're just another police force putting more and more regulatory oversights on us. And I don't think people realize. I loved running non-accredited schools. It was like being free.
Okay, hold on. So explain, why is there an accrediting agency? What is that for?
It's the gateway to Title IV funds.
Explain Title IV funds.
That's government grants directly for students.
Federal.
And loans. Grants and loans that they then use to attend your school.
Okay, and what percentage? Is this a big part of our industry, of your business, of beauty schools? What percentage of students are getting these federal grants? Or aid?
Nearly all of our students can at least qualify for a loan. So occasionally we get cash paying students, and my frustration is I should be able to give that person a discount because I don't have near the oversight requirements, and they're paying as they go. I'll give you an example. I was thinking of your business. Let's say all your customers, your hairdressers, paid you through some government program, and that's the only way they could pay you,
right?
You know, but so you had to step in and, you know, take the poison that way. And but the government has a deal: if they don't go to work, you don't get paid. If they go on vacation, you don't get paid. The only time you're getting paid is when they're there.
Okay, hold on. So if your students don't go to work, you don't get paid?
Well, if they don't attend class.
If your students don't attend class, you don't get paid.
Well, you don't get paid for that day. I don't earn anything. They have a seat in my school.
Right.
They're not coming. The hardest thing is to get them to understand the government isn't handing me a big check up front.
Well, quite the opposite, right? I mean, the government is kind of an intermediary that you have to deal with, that you, and I imagine similar to like Medicare and things like that.
Yes.
You got to go out there and get the money from the government.
Yeah. The government says we're going to pay you. Now, service that person, give them all the equipment they need, and then we will send you money. But if they drop for any reason, there's a good chance you're not keeping what we sent you. And technically, the student's going to owe you a whole bunch of money. If our students, I mean, things have changed tremendously. Now we give this fancy kit, which I think is stupid, but it's marketing. It's what Paul Mitchell and the other big boys brought to the table. You know, they brought a lot of glitter to the school business. And it was a time I was half the price of them. And students said, well, you must not be as good, so I'm not going here. So I had to, well, I got to go get them a fancy kit. I got to charge him more. So I started partnering out with the industry, with Bedell Sassoon's company. You know, I partnered with a lot of companies. I bring in the best products. I give these kids everything that's out there, expose it to all of them, because they're paying good money, but they don't understand 40 cents on the dollar goes to administer the program.
Yeah.
You know, administer the funds.
Right.
And nearly half of what I spend doesn't end up in a classroom.
Right. Just the administration of the federal funds, the grants, the financial aid and stuff.
Look at it this way. You could charge $100 a month rent, but if you're only going to – you don't know how much of that $100 you get to collect, what are you going to do? You charge $200.
More, right.
Yeah. So you end up averaging the $100 you need.
Right.
And that's kind of what goes on in the school business.
Right. And of course, the most responsible end up paying the $200, and the least, because the least responsible basically go away, even though they have a seat reserved in your school.
You nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. That's exactly what happens.
Which is highly frustrating.
Well, because you're the bearer of bad tidings, you know? I'm sorry. I know that's a lot of money, but you don't understand how the system's working.
Yeah.
You know, my wife's a doctor. You got to see what goes on in that profession.
No, I know. That's a different episode.
Okay. Yeah, that is.
Okay. So the federal funds and the red tape from the Department of Education, is it something that you wish wasn't there, or is it the underpinning and foundation of the industry?
It's, I consider it a necessary evil right now, because the only way I can compete is to have that availability. Because if none of us had access to it, and don't get me wrong, these kids are entitled to this money just like the four-year degrees that, God forbid, the story's what gets spent for a degree that brings you nothing.
Right.
And part of the situation for our segment of education is they don't think our students are smart enough to make good decisions. So if they pound on the school and hold them, you know, we're accountable for a student for 3 years. We have to put them in school. In order to be accredited and get financial aid, we have to enroll them. We have to complete them. We have to get them their license. We have to get them a job, and we have to get them paying back their loan. And that gets tracked for 3 years. So when you talk about administrative costs, it's not just accessing the funds. It's constantly proving that student made a wise decision.
I mean, even after they leave your school.
Yes. Yes, we have to track them. And keep them current on their loans. So we work with them, you know, it is what it is, but it's an insult to the kids coming to cosmetology, because they're every bit as bright as somebody going to college, a regular four-year, get a degree that leads to nothing and be $150,000 in debt.
Yeah.
It's just
okay. So I had no idea that part of the red tape was that you had to get them a job and you had to keep track of them. What if they just stop responding to you and you can't figure out what's going on with them? I imagine that happens.
Oh yeah, yeah. We you know, thank God I got the second generation here who relates much better to the current crop of students. I mean, we run raffles. We do all this social media. I mean, I can remember when I got in this business, the big decision was how big a Yellow Page ad to put out, because you were going to have to pay for that all year. Now I got a whole department that's social media, you know? So we're constantly reaching out to these students. Most of them don't need us to find the job. We need them to tell us where they're working and document that in an appropriate fashion. So as a school, we do every year we do an annual report both to the state and to our accrediting agency. Every year we have audited financials done for the Department of Education and for the state and the accrediting agency. I mean, the business has gotten compared to when you say what's changed, it's gotten very, very complicated to continue to provide this sort of opportunity to the kids that they're a perfect fit for it. Right. You know, these are not stupid. These people come to school are not dumb at all. They're big-hearted people.
Of course. Okay, so I'm certainly getting the impression that it's very, very complicated. In return for getting this financial support, the accrediting agency, tell me what that is. So we talked about the financial support, but what is the accrediting agency there for? To hold the schools accountable for being deserving of this federal aid?
Exactly. They, by far, the Department of Education federally depends on them to ensure that we exist and we are actually teaching. They do a much better job than our state agency that is supposed to be doing that. You know, California, we got to have two different agencies doing the exact same thing. And but the accrediting agency does a good job in certain in the educational aspect of it. The problem is over the years, they've morphed and they have you doing things. You have people in the accrediting agency take distance learning. You know, during the pandemic, we jumped on distance learning to keep our students somewhat progressing through the program. As I watched it unfold in our campuses, I went, you know what? This would make a great way for students who miss a day or have to be gone for a week. They could jump online and continue to earn some credits.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, you're going to see what our accrediting agency did with that tool. That tool became a whole new program with all the hurdles involved in getting approved. So I student out when they start and go, do you want to enroll in the get some distance ed credit program or do you want to enroll in the non-one? But you got to enroll in one or the other instead of just saying, here's an extra textbook. Use it.
Yeah.
I mean, so we basically said, we're not going to do this. They've made it too complicated. It doesn't benefit the student. And that's right. Primarily, you know, our mantra is, you know, we're a people helping company. How's this helping the students? We're setting them up to fail.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to enroll here and then we're going to have to drop them from that program because they're not meeting that requirement when they would have been better off over here in this program. Well, we'll just stick to this one over here. We'll figure it out.
Right. Okay, so we have two different governmental bodies. We got federal and then we have state. And I think everybody listening knows that the state is the one who primarily governs the activity of our industry, you know, within the state. How are they involved in, or are they involved in schools?
Well, you've got the State Board of Barbering and Cosmetology, which is indirectly very much involved because there's where we send our proof of trainings. They are the ones providing the testing. So they provide the outlines of the curriculum. So they're in charge of subject matter and licensing. Then we have the Bureau for Private Postsecondary Education, which, by the way, in 1990, schools were governed by the state board, the Barbering and Cosmetology, and then they invented this new agency, and at the 11th hour, they said, oh, well, move cosmetology schools over to us, too. And we're like odd man out in terms of, I mean, they police some of those big private schools, the computer schools, like DeFry, those types.
Yeah.
You know, but they're private for-profit schools. We're the mom and pops. I don't even know today how a single school owner gets everything done they have to do in a single day. You know, I'm lucky. We have six schools. We have just like you have multiple locations, so you can hire the people to make sure all those things get done out there that need to be done. And you spread the cost of that so you keep your rents lower than they would have to be if you were just that single guy there. Of course, I do realize we got the same agency. You got workers' comp, you got, you know, labor department, all those things.
Yep. But we're not as heavily regulated as you are. I mean, I'm getting the impression that there's a lot going on with, you know, between the government and, you know, holding you accountable to certain things and blah, 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 blah. It sounds like a nightmare, to tell you the truth. Have the how many hours were needed back in 1990 to graduate and get a license?
1,600.
And now we're still 1,600, right?
We tried to. I'm not a fan of 1,600 hours. I call it.
What do you think?
Well, see, I've been to Sacramento. I don't know. I get two kids coming to my school. Hey, you could probably do it in 900. You? I think you're going to need 2,000. So I advocated in Sacramento. First and foremost, the simple thing was to get a hairdressing license. That's a way to cut down the hours. People enroll in cosmetology school either want to do nail care, skin care, or hair care. So I said, it's a simple thing. We already have a nail license. We have a skin care license. Why don't we just have a hairdressing license? Believe it or not, Eric, my biggest enemies, I built a great reputation at the time. My biggest enemies were from within, especially the public cosmetology programs. They wanted nothing to do with change.
And because
my experience was because they're comfortable. People, you know how it is.
Yeah.
People are comfortable. They don't want to make a change. They just want to plod along. I even have it with my third generation. This is going good. Why are you trying to fix it? I said, we can always make it better. Yeah. You know, it's working now. But if we don't keep swimming, what do they say? Sharks die. They don't swim.
Right. Yeah.
During the 90s, I was very proactive. I had a different organization back then, but same concept as the PBFC. And I totally underestimated. I thought everybody could see it. Of course, a 1,200-hour hairdressing course is good. It's good because that's what they want. And it's going to be easier to get them in, out, and into the workforce. Well, now that the regulations have changed so much in the last 25 years, you know, now it's kind of being shoved down our throat to a certain degree, and there's less pushback than there was. I know there's a bill in Sacramento wants to make a cosmetology 1,000 hours.
Yeah, and so now you're talking about SB 803. And some of our listeners may have listened to the episode with Fred where we focused on SB 803. Can you give a brief summary of what SB 803 is?
803 is kind of what the PBFC is all about now. We when we get served lemons, we run in and try to make lemonade out of it. There's some good things there. There's conceptually, there's some good things. 1,000 hours. Okay. But let's make it easy on everybody. Make it a hairdressing license. It doesn't even disrupt my school or my students, because all I do is take out any education in regards to nail care and skin care, and that's about what 1,000 hours is anyway. But no, they want to make a cosmetology license 1,000 hours. Okay, if we got to do that, what choice do I have? The only thing I'm going to do is, you're not coming to school more than 5 hours a day, and you better be working the 5 hours you're here, because you don't have any time to waste anymore if you're going to get your license.
Because you got to cram everything in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what they're doing is they're getting rid of the practical exam and going just to the written. And they think they're helping the students. Well, guess what? Students fail the written exam at a much higher rate than the practical exam.
Now, hold on. First, tell me, why do you think they're doing that? You say to help the students, to make it easier to get a license?
They think it's easier. Listen, Eric, unfortunately, our industry, and another reason the PBFC is so important, is not well thought of. Never in my entire life in this business, you know, a hairdresser... Anybody can be a hairdresser, and they couldn't have it any farther from the truth, or the fact, the amount of money that people can make and have made and are making in this industry.
Yeah.
And you talk about, you know, so it's we're a big industry, but we're, I think they told me in Sacramento one time, yeah, your industry's like herding cats. You know, everybody's, they want to jump in, tell you what you want to do, and then they leave. It's like, no, just be a part of an organization and sit back, relax, and let it work for you. We're trying to do what's right in Sacramento. You know, an example of what I just said, the skincare people came out strong at the last hearing in favor of 803. Why? Because the one element in that that helped them was all they cared about. They didn't care about the exam, how long, you know, the new 600-hour haircutting course that they're talking about. They didn't come in and go, hey, we want your help supporting our section of the bill, and we'll help you reinforce that these other elements in it aren't well thought out. And that's really all it is. This is just not well thought out legislation. The frustration in Sacramento is, even though we've been talking to them, you're basically not even dealing with the elected officials. You're dealing with bureaucrats, a committee consultant that's going to be there forever, where your state senator is going to be termed out. So the right. state senator's depending on that person, and he doesn't have the time or the energy to do the homework. So yeah. It is up there.
Enough. Right? Well, doesn't care.
Well, sometimes, you know, if you've got some good long-term relationships in Sacramento, you'd be surprised what you can get done or stop from getting done. And yes, our industry, listen, I'm all for cutting the hours. I'm for getting rid of a time clock. You know, how do you measure an education on a time clock? That's like a sentence. You're going to be here for 1600 hours, regardless of what you do. It's insane, but you know, you're asking people to think outside the box.
Well, what you said makes a lot of sense. Some people could do it, could accomplish it, could gain the skills to be successful after school in 600. Some it might take 2000. But of course, from the bureaucrat standpoint, they want to guard against a scenario in which a school just wants to run everybody through, you know, in a short amount of time without actually giving them the skills to succeed. So I that's why the time thing exists. An ideal scenario would be everybody is super honest and the schools put each student through their subjective necessary education.
Wouldn't that be nice? We have our bad apples, so then therefore we're all bad. I mean, the nail care sector, you know, I hadn't taught nails in years, and we only recently, last 3-4 years, got back into the teaching that program just because of demand. But you're right. So, I mean, I made a suggestion to a state board, and this is what they did in Nevada. When you enrolled in school, you registered with the state board. So now you can't sell hours. Regardless, hey, if you want to go in and pay that school and wait the same amount of time that it would have taken to gone to school, you know, so be it. But at least you're not just going in the front door and out the back door.
I don't understand. So in Nevada, you do what?
When I was operating a school in Nevada, when a student enrolled in school, You filed that with the state board. You filled out a piece of paper, said this student enrolled on this day for this program, and it is attending this many hours a week. Okay, well, then, because they have mandates on how long you can go to school anyway, I mean, in terms of daily. So then the state had a record. If that student showed up a week later saying, I graduated, they would know that that was fraudulent.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's ways to, it's like you just said, not everybody's honest. So you got to design a system that doesn't punish honest people by making sure the dishonest ones don't come in. Dishonest people come in for a reason.
Yeah, of course. All right. So where is 803 right now? What is the current status?
803 is out of committee and it's going to appropriations. Hopefully we haven't given up getting better amendments out of Senator Roth. Right now we have a 600-hour hair cutting and styling program, which I don't really understand where the demand for that came from, except from some of the chain operators that want cut rate. And I have a solution for them. Tell you what, just like Hollywood, you can take them off the street and under your corporate umbrella, you can put them to work behind a chair. And that's the only place they get to work. Eventually, that kid will come to school if he likes what he's doing, because that's a dead-end job we just put him in. But see, they don't want that. They want me to train them for a job that is very limited in scope, which means, you know, not that they can't still make it, but to deny them the ability, like hair color is huge. You're not going to be coloring hair. How many clients are you going to have if you can't color their hair? That's right. More important than the cut.
Right.
But it works for them. I'm not opposed to that, but it's like being a cook at McDonald's versus being a chef.
Yeah.
You want to cook and, you know, work for lower wages? Maybe you'll go to culinary school. I don't know.
So SB 803 came out in a certain form, and then the PBFC has been, and others have been, lobbying to craft it in better ways for the industry. And so nothing has passed yet.
No.
Okay.
But it's made it through a big hurdle. We're still, I got a letter. It happens to be I'm a constituent of Senator Ross. Okay. I've met with him. I also met with Assemblyman Lowe. Those were that they co-chaired the committee where this bill was being crafted. And I'm just going to try to sit down with him one more time and go, look, I told you, you know, I suggested a 1,200-hour hairdressing course. I'll go 1,000. I think that's reasonable. Let's make it 1,000 hours and call it a hairdressing course. Leave the 16 or drop that to 15, but leave it intact. You know how many people are out there who did that program and carry that license? You know, we want to let them feel good about it. What do I believe will happen, though, is very few people will get the full cosmetology license going forward.
Yeah.
You know? But it's nice to put out there. Hey, you want to go back to school and learn nail care and skin care and then be called a cosmetologist? Great. You know? I think opportunity is the main thing.
So for the listeners who want to get involved in this, contact the PBFC. If you haven't joined the PBFC, I say this all the time, join the PBFC. You can contact them, let them know your thoughts, and ask them how to get involved. If it's a matter of, you know, protesting, I know there have been protests up in Sacramento and different elements, different ways to get involved. Definitely do that. And the PBFC is the one leading the charge on that. Okay. So over the 20 years that I've been in this business, I've heard ad nauseum people complain that beauty schools don't prepare them for real life in the salon. Why are they complaining about that, and how do you respond?
Well, first and foremost, you could take the best student, put them in the worst school, and they're going to be successful. I got a degree in business. It took me 4 years. You know what? I didn't know the first thing about running a business. I mean, that's the nature of education. It would be nice if they would all listen and follow the guidance we're trying to put out there. You know, one thing I worked on for years was build a client program. And this is back before we had the computers the way we did. I put these card boxes together, said, hey, recruit clients, write down all their information. And when you walk out the door, you got a box of clients to get started with, which in today's market is extremely important, because this industry has gone from the dream of owning a salon to just wanting to be an independent contractor. I mean, I'm currently, something I'd like to talk to you about, I'm debating if I could put together a program for my best students in which we mentor them into becoming independent contractors. I mean, I've thought about, I've researched, hey, maybe I should open one of these for the express purpose of taking my best students and helping them. I've got the social media. I'm going to teach you how to be an independent contractor. You're going to come here. Your rent's going to start low, but within a year to 18 months, I want you moving off into a, you know, one of the other operations, because I need the I need your space to teach the next person. Yeah. So they paid while they learn. You know, right now you can't pay a student while they're in school.
Right.
I can't let the student technically collect the money from the client. If I could, I'd use that as an incentive.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think that's a really good idea. People tell me all the time that they wish that they learned some of the elements, just the fundamental elements of operating as a hairdresser. Even for those who work in a team-based environment, even they need to go and get clients. You know, there aren't lines of walk-ins coming in. Maybe there used to be, but people don't shop for hairdressers the same way. As they used to. So even if you're in a team-based environment, you need to learn a lot of the elements of running your own business. And even in that compensation program, I mean, most of what you're earning is what you're performing. So I think it's a natural thing to offer. And one of the things that I consistently hear that is needed within the schools. You know, it was one of the things I wanted to ask you because of this constant drumbeat of, I wish I learned how to get new clients. I wish I learned how to manage my book better. I wish I learned how to price myself. I wish I learned how to, you know, do A, B, and C.
You don't know how many times I've heard a student say, I'm going to do that when I get out of here. So they're not doing the things we're telling them they need to do. I mean, you know, today, in today's society, with social media and the internet, there's really no excuse. But we don't have that versatility. What I have to do is take hairdressers, and I got some great people that work here. They're really good at doing hair. Now I'm asking them, and I've brought in people to teach special business classes and that sort of thing. And I've come to realize there's only so much we can do. So get really good at that. And just, my job is to teach them what they don't know. Go learn it. You're learning that here, but you need to know that. Go online. Look at this guy. You know, if we find good resources, I mean, heck, Eric, I'd spend tons of money trying to open their eyes with my whole social media arm and everything that's out there. I mean, I watch my son. You know how to fix that? He goes, I'll Google it. that's the society we have.
Right. Sure. So, it is definitely human nature to want to postpone uncomfortable, difficult things like learning. And then, of course, blame somebody else when you feel as if you haven't learned.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, but it's not true of the entire industry. I mean, either, you know, you get students that come out of school and they rant and rave about you. You go, God, that's why I do it. Then you got people out in the industry that say, of course I wouldn't learn that in school. I understand the process. They taught me what I needed to know. I mean, we take passing the exam as a given, not a goal. Our goal is not passing the exam. Our goal is to prepare them to the best of our ability to be successful in a salon. Hence the name.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of things differently if I could. I operate with one arm tied behind my back. And then I get blamed for having one arm tied behind my back.
That is the nature of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But you know what? The industry's been good to me. I have a great respect for it. You know, you mentioned everybody should join the PBFC, you know, and they should, because we just need your number. Sacramento works like this. If we have an army of people that we connect with and we say to Senator Roth, no, Senator Roth, here's our concept and it's going to be really good for the industry and not disruptive. And he goes, oh, I don't want to go up against this group because, you know, it's like when I meet with him, I'm his constituent. He is concerned. He's just busy, you know, right. So he's relying on some seasoned, you know, bureaucrat.
Right.
They call him a consultant, and she's a consultant to the committee that he just happens to be on right now. Mm-hmm. So who's he going to look to?
Right. Her.
And that's how it works. Just like in our industry. state, you know, how many people were screaming, where's the state board? Why aren't they helping us? Right. You don't even know what the state, I mean, it's like the state board is here to help consumers.
Right.
Protect them and protect you individually, but they're not out to protect the industry as a whole.
Regulates the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's one thing that's never changed.
Yeah, we've all learned a lot over the last 16 months or so. So how has enrollment changed since COVID? I imagine that there have been fewer students.
Surprisingly, no. A lot of people sitting home making new decisions. Our shorter programs, I mean, personally, a 600-hour course, it's not for me personally, for the benefit of my school and myself personally, not a bad idea.
Because more people would come in.
Yeah, I'm an industry guy.
Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out how does this benefit the industry in terms of the prestige of people in it and the professionalism of the industry as a whole. And I'm not quite connecting those dots, but I can live with what, you know, they want to do that. You know, I'll just tell a kid, this is what this training leads to. And if you want to take it further down the road, you come back. I'll give you full credit for the 600 hours, and we'll teach you the other skills necessary. So it's not the end of the world, but it's frustrating that Sacramento doesn't listen to us. That's why the PFC is so important. And it's important that everybody realize all you got to do is pay your $25 so we can say you're a member and just let us do our work. And our work, we're going to make things better for you.
Yeah. Well,
what's that? Rising tide lifts all boats.
Of course. Of course. And so the profile of the PBFC and the need for the PBFC has certainly increased since COVID, because we all got hammered by our elected officials, our elected and unelected bureaucrats in California. So...
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So towards the end of every show, I ask this question. It's probably my favorite question. I know my listeners love it, and it allows you to kind of flex your perspective a little bit. If you could wave a wand and change anything about the industry right now, what would it be?
Oh, gosh, that is a good question, because I've tried to change so many different things. Let me see. Under the current situation, one thing I've always strived for and I'd really like to see happen, but I think it's a dream, is just the prestige of the industry, the recognition. The recognition, we're great at recognizing each other, and we're a great industry at raising money, I mean charity. I mean, we do some great things, but when it comes to the essence that we are an industry and we got all have more in common then we don't. And so we, you know, if we get everybody together and say, look, ideas are great. If you want to roll up your sleeves and help out and work, fine. Otherwise, just be a good soldier and be a part of a bigger thing. And we're going to make life better for everybody. Because you know what? Too many people look down on us as an industry, school sector, you name it. And we eat our own. You know, it's like you said. I should have learned that in school, you know. That's never changed. That's still going on. I don't know. I can think of a million little things that would add up.
Right. No, I totally agree. A couple of years ago, I started another question at the end of every episode called Hair Horror Stories. And one of my hairdresser buddies, Jacob Kahn, mentioned this. And so I've been asking every guest, what are your hair horror stories? I imagine that as somebody who's been running many, many schools for many, many decades, you have a lot of hair horror stories. So give me your best. It could be one, it could be two, it could be three. It could be something that actually happened with a client in the chair, or it could just be a school horror story, like, you know, like somebody did something wild.
That's a tough question for me. I'm so far removed from those. We had a regular client out in our Riverside store that apparently wasn't happy she had to wait for the student she wanted, and started pushing the instructor.
Oh.
And we had to end up calling the police on her to get her to go out because they, I don't know, they come in and they think they're in, I don't know, a public school where they have every right to, you know, be in there no matter what. Oh, you know, the other problem we have is it's the student's privacy right. You cannot talk to anybody, spouse, anybody about the student or the situation unless they've signed a piece of paper saying we can. So, you know, we take those heated phone calls where they want to talk. We can't talk to you. Have your wife, you know, bring in that paper for us, and then you can come in and talk with us about it. They just don't. Yeah. It's a constant in that regard because they just don't understand. We're not making this up. This isn't our rule. It's law. There's lots of laws out there protecting you.
Oh, yeah. So you know? Did you ever have a student who just could not pass the exam?
Oh, yeah, we've had some. Our policy on that is simply get back in here. You know, it's free.
Yeah.
Let's with you. Let's figure it out. You know, some people don't test well. That's right. The sad part. They can be talented. They can be extremely talented, but they freeze up, you know?
Yeah, they get nervous.
Yeah.
And you said the written part is the hard part.
Surprisingly, yeah. And they want to, you know, back when I went to school, first of all, you're waiting 6 months for your exams. Can you imagine that? I can tell you all about work permits that I couldn't get past. Because I think anybody enrolled in beauty school should be able to work in a salon while they're there. You know, why not? You'll learn how to get clientele. You'll watch it firsthand. When you get out of school, you'll be that much farther along, you know, but it's, you know, this, our industry has been regulated for so long. It's just embedded. Yeah. And when you come up and going, hey, there's better ways to do this. No, we got to do it this way. It's like you alluded to, you know, I understand 1600 hours, partly from what you said earlier. And it's a nice average for the industry across the country. Is it right for everybody? Heck no. And in today's world, probably isn't the right way to be dealing with it anyway, but it's been there forever. When I was in beauty school, I went to my dad one day and I said, Dad, is this it? And he just looked at me and said, you'll learn. You know, because I was challenging. I'm a guy who challenges things. And I'm going, we can do better. He goes, you'll understand later. And sure enough, I did, you know. That was a horror story in itself.
I imagine. And I imagine trying to work with your sister running the business. That was an early episode horror story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My brother, best thing that happened for me personally was they decided to do other things. When I took over, I just said, you know what? I'm spending all the time where we're failing. Let's focus on our strong points and even do a better job. Yeah. And that's what we did.
Any last words for the community?
I tell them, nobody knows how hard you actually work. So, I mean, I just ran into a couple of hairdressers the other day at a local restaurant. I picked them right out of the crowd, too. Mm-hmm. I knew what they did for a living. And I thought, you know, they're buying. I said, what a great industry we're in. What a great way to make a living. And these people, I don't see them sitting behind a desk doing anything else. So we got to get them prepared to become independent contractors, because that, to me, is where the industry has gone. I've only seen it grow and grow. It started with booth renting.
Yeah.
You know, I wish it was mom and pop salon like it was, but there's too many obstacles. I understand why it's evolved to this level, you know? Yeah. And people like you, you know, who came in later than me, just saw it for what it was. This is great. I can put all these people in business.
Yeah.
Help them get businesses. I think I've come to realize it's a great concept. Yeah. You know, at first I was going, why would people do it? Because hairdressers are also very people-oriented. You've got to be, you know? Yeah. So you provide the right environment. Seems to be highly successful. You're successful. See all these other ones going up all over the place.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
People working the way they want to work.
Yeah.
Happier.
So what I got to do is start a whole new educational arm to better prepare them to go work in that environment. There's no mentoring out there, per se. Very little.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to call it a mentoring program.
I love it. I love it. I'll help if you want.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to you at some point. I'll give you what I conceive as my business model and my concept for it. And I want to know what you think about it.
That sounds good. But for now, we're going to say bye to the listeners. Bob, thank you so much for coming on here and telling us about the schools and everything that's going on. It's been very interesting. And hopefully the changes that are happening right now are positive changes for the industry long term.
We're pretty resilient. So I think they can be. We'll make them work. We're in a creative industry. What else are we going to do?
Exactly. We adapt. We adapt, yep. And we get stronger. Yep.
You got it.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Eric.
Hey, guys. Hope you liked that episode about beauty schools. I've always wanted to do an episode about beauty schools. It took a long time. Finally got one down. I hope to do more in the future. Please write your comments or questions or any ideas for episodes on Instagram, the Hair Game Podcast on Instagram DM. Podloot is changing. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the first episode of every month is when we will give away $500 cash to one lucky winner for a chance to win. Write a review on the Apple Podcast app. The review has to include your exact Instagram handle. Make sure you're following the Hair Game Podcast and Lover Taylor on Instagram. I put your name in the bag. On the first episode of every month, I pull a name and I announce the winner. You have to be listening to win. The winner has to DM us within 2 weeks of when we release the episode to claim the money. If you don't win, keep listening because your name stays in the bag in my office. You could win the next drawing, the next month. And by the way, if the $500 is not claimed, it turns into $750. That's right. We roll it over to $750. For complete details, go to salonrepublic.com. Next week's episode will be a surprise. Until then, have a great week.